Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce that farmers can't sell, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Abortion rights is on the front burner. Last week, the Vermont House approved a bill guaranteeing a woman's right to a safe and legal abortion. We're going to spend the hour this week looking at abortion rights and reproductive freedom around the country and in Vermont. We'll begin by looking at the national picture, and I'm going to quote from a remarkable 8-part editorial series that the New York Times ran, which began this way. You might be surprised to learn that in the United States, a woman coping with the heartbreak of losing her pregnancy might also find herself facing jail time. Say she got in a car accident in New York or gave birth to a stillborn in Indiana. In such cases, women have been charged with manslaughter. In fact, a fetus need not die for the state to charge a pregnant woman with a crime. Women who fell down the stairs, who ate a poppy seed bagel and failed a drug test, or who took legal drugs during pregnancy, drugs prescribed by their doctors, all have been accused of endangering their children. The Times article editorials go on, such cases illuminate a deep shift in American society away from a centuries-long tradition in Western law and toward the embrace of a relatively new concept that a fetus in the womb has the same rights as a fully formed person, close quote. To talk about this, we have as our guest in the first half hour, Lynn Paltrow. She is the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. She's worked on numerous cases challenging restrictions on the right to choose abortion, as well as cases opposing the prosecution and punishment of pregnant women seeking to continue their pregnancies to term. Lynn Paltrow, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you for having me.
So these are this series that was in the Times, and I encourage listeners to look at this 8-part editorial series. I actually can't remember a similar editorial series, multi-part series that the Times or any paper has run in this nature. These sound like sensational cases, car accidents, poppy seed bagels, and women, pregnant women getting prosecuted. Lynn, what is the picture like around the country? How common is it for these kinds of things to be prosecuted?
Unfortunately, and I have to say they're increasingly common, or at least they're happening more and more in some states more than others. And these kinds of state actions, and they include not only arrests of women who've had, they include arrests of women who've had abortions, women who've had miscarriages and stillbirths, and women who have gone to term and given birth to healthy babies. These arguments are also used to justify forced medical interventions on pregnant women, including forced cesarean surgeries over the woman's objections and without a medical need, as shown in many of these cases. We're seeing more of these as the direct result of the anti-abortion, so-called pro-life movement. and their agenda to reverse Roe v. Wade and gain control over the people who give birth by claiming that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses should be treated as if they're completely separate rights-bearing persons.
What does this trace back to? I mean, the fight over abortion rights has focused on, for some time, abortion itself. But you're saying there is a whole parallel movement to have essentially de facto restrict or eliminate reproductive rights.
I would argue that it's to remove all women from the protections of the Constitution, because some of the laws that are connected to the anti-abortion movement really impact the way in which we think about women and the amount of respect they are given in terms of access to health care and medical decision making. For example, something like 30 states have laws almost every state now allows people to have advance directives, pieces of paper that say, this is what I want to have happen to me if I can't communicate my wishes. 30 states have provisions for advance directives that specifically exclude pregnant women. So if you are pregnant, you do not have the right to have your wishes followed. And in one case that happened fairly recently in Texas, a woman dropped dead while she was about 14 weeks pregnant. Her wishes were extraordinarily clear that she did not want to be put on life support or if something like that happened to her. The fact was she was actually dead, and there was not one of those fights about is she dead, is she not dead, but the hospital that they had taken her to took the position that Texas's advance directive laws gave them an obligation to appropriate her dead body and use it to gestate a 14-week fetus. And that's an example of, you might think, oh, well, that just impacts you if you happen to be pregnant, if you become unable to communicate your wishes. But really, it is a very blatant form of gender discrimination, something that's about even more than reproductive rights, because what it says is if you are a man, you can have the security and the confidence that what you want to have happen to you in your medical care will be respected. But if you are somebody who can get pregnant, your wishes will not necessarily be followed. You are in a separate, unequal category of persons whose rights and dignity do not receive the same level of protection.
As you look around the country, which laws that have been enacted of late, or perhaps they were enacted a little while ago, concern you the most, that you think really are the tip of a spear aimed directly at reproductive freedom?
Again, I would frame it as aimed directly at equality for women, because as long as we keep thinking about reproductive rights as some kind of special, separate health care, rather than part of what half of all human beings in the United States need, and what all humans need in order for the species to survive, I think we will stay stuck in the same place. There are many different kinds of attacks. The most obvious and the one that receives the most attention are attempts to ban abortion, criminalize abortion, limit access to that form of health care. 38 states have what are called feticide laws. These are a variation on that. There are a growing number of laws which are passed in order to establish or create the idea that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses have separate rights that can be enforced by the state. And those laws are used in multiple ways to restrict pregnant women's medical decision-making, their privacy, their right to life, and their right to health. But it isn't only specific laws. It's also our overarching health care system, because The same women who have abortions also have babies and become mothers. More than half of all women who have abortions are already mothers. So it's not like there are two different kinds of women, and it's only in the context of abortion that women have trouble accessing the care they need or are stigmatized for accessing the care they need. Women more and more, especially in rural parts of America, cannot access the birth support that they need. They have to drive hundreds of miles. They can't, if they want an OBGYN, they can't access one. If they use alternative or more informed care through a midwife, it may be that the midwife's work is criminalized. So that it is about, it is not just specific laws that target and seek to limit health care for the people who can get pregnant. It's also an overarching health care system that deprives many people, including pregnant women, from access to the care they need, whether it's around birth or drug treatment or mental health services or just general health care.
One of the cases that is highlighted in your work and in the Times editorial is mothers who miscarry being jailed. How can that happen?
Well, we are very focused on ourselves in the United States. But if you look anywhere outside of the United States to any country where abortion remains criminalized, there are women, for example, in El Salvador sitting in jail, convicted of having had abortions when, in fact, what they experienced were pregnancy losses from miscarriages or stillbirths. And the truth is, it's really almost impossible in many cases to determine whether the pregnancy outcome was the result of a miscarriage, a stillbirth, or an abortion. So if you allow the criminal law, if you allow the government to decide whether what happens to you in relationship to your pregnancy is a criminal action, you lose control. It doesn't matter what your intent was. It doesn't even matter what you really did. You are turning your life over to this local arresting officer, the prosecutor, the judge. So we don't have to, you know, guess about what could happen. We are also seeing more arrests in the United States of women who have had abortions, of a woman who obtained the medication misoprostol, which is extremely safe and extremely effective in ending early pregnancies. It should be something that women can get over the counter, as they can in many parts of the world, as part of their ability to take care of themselves. That woman used the medication later in pregnancy. She was discovered, Purvi Patel, and she was charged in Indiana with and convicted originally of the crime of feticide. While women no longer should ever have to turn to a coat hanger, to what people think of as back alley abortions, because there are now these very safe medications, misoprostol and mifepristone, but this woman, Amayoka, used a coat hanger to attempt having an abortion. She was arrested on attempted murder charges. So these arrests are already happening in the United States, and they were prefaced by, they were, the permissibility of them or acceptability of them started by targeting in the late 80s and early 90s, particularly black pregnant women accused of smoking cocaine, crack, and giving birth overwhelmingly to healthy babies, but theoretically risking harm to those babies, creating the precedent for viewing what a woman does or experiences while she's pregnant as a crime.
So this so-called Plan C, abortion done with pills as opposed to surgically, these laws are essentially trying to evolve as abortion itself evolves and prosecute women for these medical abortions.
Well, medical abortion has, as provided in clinics, has always used these medications, but like many other medications, eventually it is learned that they are absolutely safe and effective when used with or without the support or oversight of a physician, who can be costly, and I want to step back and say the restrictions on abortion cross everything. So if you have a state that requires that you first see your doctor, then wait 24 hours, or first see your doctor, then wait 24 hours, then have a sonogram and come back. That's three trips that you have to make from wherever you live to access a clinic-based abortion. And those rules apply whether you are having an aspiration abortion or you're having a medication abortion. It's not related to health care of women. It's about controlling women and depriving them of equal access to health care that is based on their needs.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're speaking this half hour with Lynn Paltrow, the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. Lynn, as this newly constituted Supreme Court with Brett Kavanaugh is hearing cases, what is in the pipeline that worries you the most that they are going to be considering as it relates to women and women's health?
It's all worrying. I think to have a list of, there are many cases that could get there. I think back to before Roe, when Roe was decided, there were actually 13 cases challenging laws criminalizing abortion percolating in the federal court system, and it happened to be the one from Texas that reached the Supreme Court. There are many state laws, from six-week so-called heartbeat laws to a variety of trap targeted regulation of abortion provider laws. And right at this very minute, apparently the court is considering whether it will take a case from Colorado that actually involves the disposition of frozen embryos. And an argument in that case is that the frozen embryos, contributor who wants them to live should win because they should be viewed as if they are already born persons and their right to life protected. So there are some, I don't spend my time worrying about which case. I like to spend my time thinking about what it is we have to do differently to build the base of activism and support that says we are entitled as human beings to health care. And if half of us have the capacity for pregnancy, the health care we need includes maternal and reproductive health, and we are going to fight together to ensure that everybody gets the health care they need.
Where are you seeing hopeful signs? There are states, Vermont is in process, New York has just passed, or is also the Reproductive Health Act there is being deliberated. What do these laws do that isn't already being done by the law?
Well, what the New York law did, interestingly enough, in 1970, New York became one of the first states to repeal its overarching criminal abortion law and to make abortion legal in many more contexts than it had been before. It did not, however, take abortion out of the criminal code. And it kept some crimes, including the crime of self-abortion. So what happened in New York State was actually pretty conservative. What it did was finally bring New York State law into alignment with what the decision in Roe v. Wade said in the first place. And I like to think of what Roe said as this sort of elegant compromise. And what I mean by that is Roe said, at no point in pregnancy is a fetus a constitutional person. Constitutional personhood attaches at birth. But the court kind of sensed what all human beings sense, that as pregnancy progresses, we all, including pregnant women, think of the fetus as more like a separate person. And so they said, look, states may, if they choose, prohibit abortion after fetal viability, which occurs at a different point in every pregnancy, but later in pregnancy. And it's possible to have a 9-month fetus that is not viable, for example, one with anencephaly, no brain development. But if you want to outlaw it after viability, you may, but with two extraordinarily important exceptions. Because the court recognized that pregnant people do not lose their rights, their civil and human rights, at some stage of pregnancy, they said a woman must always be able to have an abortion if her life and health are at risk. New York's law did not have a health exception, and it did not even permit abortions for non-viable fetuses. And those abortions are quite rare, but the statement that the new law makes is we actually value fully the lives and health of pregnant women so that their health will no longer be regulated within the criminal code, and there is no point when their lives or health don't have paramount importance.
Now, the Trump administration has just pushed a law, is advancing a law that will restrict funding to Planned Parenthood. Can you just explain what has happened this week with this new law, what it does?
Well, they passed regulations that would limit what Title X family planning programs can say and do. And you have to remember, Title X family planning was once upon a time vigorously and wholeheartedly supported by Republicans and Democrats across the aisle, maybe not necessarily for the right reasons, but it has been very supported. And one of the things the regulation does is it limits when Title X providers are allowed to even to refer for abortion. And part of what that regulation and so much of what the administration and anti-abortion legislation does is to make a statement that is much bigger than the abortion issue. It is a statement that there is a class of persons, women, people with the capacity for pregnancy, who do not deserve health care determined by their health. We are supposed to be able to get health care if we need a referral for something that is not right, something that we need. We should be able to count on being able to get that referral, and our gender should not make a difference in whether we can get all of the medical information we need and are entitled to.
So for people who are concerned about protecting women's rights and reproductive rights, what do you think is the most important area to focus on now, to focus activism on right now?
That's a big question. I think there are a lot of different things that people can do. I think it's a mistake to think there's only one. Absolutely, people should be continuing to be in big dialogue with the people who are supposed to be representing them at every level. I think people need to be talking about how anti-abortion legislation is really about denying quality to women, to half the people who need health care in this country. There are all kinds of organizations that are working on the particular issue that might be of most concern to people. But you asked earlier about things that give me hope, and one of them is the work of groups like Healthcare America Now, that together, I would love to see people come together to demand health care for everyone in this country that refuses to pick off certain groups of people for exclusion. And that would include women, in which they use the abortion issue to do that, drug treatment, mental health services. Each of us, everybody listening to this show, if I said, raise your hand if you know someone who's pregnant, they would have to raise their hand. And if that is a basic fact of life, then we should be very excited and happy about working together to ensure that the people who bring forth life are respected and insured fully of their lives.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Lynn Paltrow, I want to thank you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Lynn Paltrow is the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back right after and continue this discussion.